Hello and welcome to OU's Nach Yomi. You can find this year posted at ouradio.org/nach or on my website, ericlevy.com, under the recording section.
Hi, this is Rabbi Eric Levy, and I am pleased to bring to you Psalm 39, Tehillah Lamed Tet. Psalm 39 is an individual lament, and it is not a happy psalm. As I've mentioned before, the form of the individual lament usually contains an element of confidence, usually towards the end, confidence that God will save. And sometimes it's worded in the past as if I'm so confident, it's as if God has already done it. There is no such confidence in this psalm. In addition, the form of an individual lament often contains a promise to thank God, either with words or with sacrifice, once salvation is achieved. Again, there is no such promise forthcoming here. Instead, we have a personal cry which is suffused with hopelessness. Unsurprisingly, many of the themes and even the phrases found in this psalm can be found in the book of Job, Eov, as Eov expresses his suffering on the unbearable weight of being. It is, however, this Psalm 39, a beautiful psalm, both in its structure and in its poetry. So we might ask, why would David construct such a prayer? Perhaps because he was trying to give us all the tools that we need to deal with all of the emotional and spiritual states that we go through as human beings. And despair, really bad despair, the kind of despair that does not give way easily to hope, is a state that we sometimes find ourselves in. And therefore, David gives us a psalm that we could express ourselves even when we are in that state. Lamnatzeach Lidutun Mizmor LeDavid, a song of David for the maestro for Yidutun. Yidutun is one of the three main musicians who guided music in the First Temple, along with Asaph and Heman. The Book of Chronicles also lists the three as prophets, and based on a comparison between 1 Chronicles, that is Divrei HaYamim Aleph, chapter 15, verse 19, and the same book, chapter 25, verse 1, we find out that Yedutun is also known as Eitan. In fact, Psalm 89 bears the name of Eitan as its author, and while rabbinic literature, our rabbis identify this as a nickname for the patriarch Abraham, because he was strong and reliable, which is what the word Eitan means, the plain sense is that the author of the psalm is Eitan / Yedutun. Psalm 22 and 77 also bear the name of Yedutun, although in both of these psalms, the phrase is not Le-Yedutun or Li-Dutun, but Al or On Yedutun, which makes it actually sound like an instrument rather than a person. So perhaps Yedutun or Yedutun the prophet and Yedutun the musician invented an instrument appropriate for certain psalms to be played on. Or perhaps it's the name of a musical phrasing that he created. All of this is, of course, speculation based on the text that we have, so it doesn't pay to get too caught up with the inscription itself, but more importantly, we should move on to the prayer itself. And the prayer itself begins with a unique and powerful introduction. It is the words of the poet who knows that if he opens his mouth to say anything, to pray or say anything, the words will come out too hard and too harsh. So he tells us of his attempt at self-control. Amarti, Eshmera derachai mechatov yilshoni, Eshmera lefi machsom, beod rasha linegdi. I said, let me guard my behavior so as not to sin with my tongue. I will set a guard or a muzzle for my mouth for as long as the villain is before me, or perhaps against me. I translated Rasha this time as villain, and in other psalms I translated as wicked or evildoer, because all of these are pretty good, so I'm just kind of offering different opinions, and villain has a nice ring to it. So what's happening here is that the author is trying to control himself. He's trying not to respond verbally to the troubles that confront him and that burn inside of him. Ne'elamti dumia hechasheti mitov ucheivi ne'kar. I was mute with silence. I was totally still. The word tov, hechasheti mitov, tov usually it means good. So it's a little difficult here since in our psalm, the overall feeling is negative. There's really not a lot of good going on here. So I translated the word as well, like something, a bed that is well made or a case that is well done. So here, hechasheti mitov, I'm translating it as well still. But it could mean that I was silent in the face of good or that I ignored the good. But again, there doesn't seem much good to speak about here. So I prefer the word as an adjective, well, or an adverb, well. Getting back to the verse, Uchevi ne'ekar, and my pain became more and more troublesome. So the more he tries to hold it in, Cham libi bikirbi bahagigi tivareish dibarti bilshoni. My heart burned inside of me, fire burned in my speech, then I spoke with my tongue. So essentially, he loses it. He lets go, and boy, does it come out. Notice that in the next verse, it begins the way laments usually begin, with a direct call to God, O Lord, which really tells us that the previous few lines were an introduction, an attempt to not say it to Hillel, and yet he cannot hold himself back, and he belts out with the following prayer. Hodieni Adonai kitsi umidat yamai mahi, Eda mechadel ani. O Lord, let me know when my end is coming and what the measure of my days are. Let me know how fleeting I am. Our psalmist seems to just want to know when all the troubles will be resolved with the gift of permanent sleep. He seems to just want to die. But there's also something else going on here. He's hinting at the very frailty of man when compared to God, a theme which we will return to. Hinei tfachot natata yamai v'cheldi ka'ayin negdecha, ach kol hevel kol adam nitzav sela. Behold, you set my lifespan with a short measure. Tfachot is literally a hand's breadth. Its span is like nothing in your eyes. All that a man is, all of his existence, literally, as he stands, nitzav, is like vapor, hevel, fleeting, nothingness, vanity. Ach betzelem yitalech ish, ach hevel yehem mayun, yitzbor velo yeda mi osefam. Even does man walk in darkness, even do they trouble themselves about vapor, hevel, about nothingness, and what he heaps together, that is the produce of the field, without knowing, he heaps it all together without knowing who will gather it in. I mentioned that there were many references to the book of Job, and unsurprisingly, these last two lines are very similar of a futility also expressed in another book, which is called Kohelet, or the book of Ecclesiastes, which begins, Hevel Havalim Amar Havel Havalim Hakol Havel. The question is, what good is all the work that man toils to do under the sun, because one doesn't even live, because of the short lifespan, the very mortality of human beings, one barely gets to reap the profits, one barely will see who it is who continues or finishes the work that one puts all one's effort into. And now we have actually come to the petition for help from God, although it has far less hope than the usual petition found in individual laments. Ve'ata ma kiviti Adonai tochalti l'chahi. And now what hope do I have, Lord, except to put my hope in you, or perhaps to wait for you. Mikol psha'ai hatzileini cherpat naval al tisimeini. Rescue me from all of my sins. Don't place me in the position to be the shame of foolish people. So what we have here is an admission of sin. Mikol psha'ai hatzileini. Save me from all of my sin. On one hand, you might protest and say, that's not like Eov, like Job, because Eov never admits to sin. But as we will see, much like Job, the sin is not so much in that he's admitting he's done something wrong, but he's admitting that by his very existence, he's born to sin. Why? Because any comparison of a mortal against God, the mortal is found wanting and faulty. That's a theme that runs through Eov, and I think that's really what's being said here. If you put all the verses together, it's not so much about his sin, it's about the fact that his life is fleeting, it's nothingness, he works hard and nothing ever happens. Is that compared to God, you know, what could he be other than a sinner? But first, an accusation of sorts against God, and against the fact that he believes God is simply much too harsh, perhaps because is since the state of man is to be an imperfect human being, to punish him with full force is simply unfair. Ne'elamti lo eftach pi ki ata asita. I was dumb. I will not open my mouth. This takes us back, of course, to the beginning of the psalm, the introduction, where the poet tries and fails to remain silent. But now he has a reason to keep silent. Who's he going to complain to? Because as he says, ki ata asita. That is, why am I bothering to sing this lament to God and ask for forgiveness? Because I know that it's you're the one who's sending me the punishment in the first place. Yes, I'm human, and therefore I'm frail, and therefore I've sinned, and therefore you're sending me punishment my way. So what's the point of talking? Because it's you, God, who has brought all of this down on me in the first place. Haser me'alai nig'echo, mitigrat yadcha ani chaliti. Remove your plague from me. I am finished off from the fear. Or I am near death from the fear or the blows of your hand. Betochachot al avon yisarta ish, vatemes ka'ash chamudo, achevel kol adam sela. You discipline the man, i.e. me, with rebukes over sin. So there's an admission of sin, but at the same time, there's an accusation the punishment is too harsh. You melt it away like a moth eats away its desire, i.e. a cloak. Every man, i.e. including me, is vanity. Achevel kol adam is vapor, is nothingness, sela. That is to say that the life and the existence of man is so fleeting that when God punishes, it's like a moth eating through a thin cloak. Or today we might say that God's punishments cut like a hot knife through butter. Also, I'm not going to translate the word sela. This is the second time we've seen it, always after a declaration that man's life is fleeting, or havel. Many have tried to translate sela, and I think it's best to just see it as a musical interlude. And now, at the end of the section, following the sela, we really wind off with two psukim, which almost talk, one hand they push God away, and another hand they pull God closer. As if the author, in his despair, does really not know which path will bring him relief from all the suffering. So first he begs God to listen, and then he begs God to leave him alone. Shema tefilati Adonai v'shavati ha'azina el dimati al techarash ki ger anochi imach toshav kechol avotai. Listen to my prayer, O Lord. Give ear to my petition. Do not disregard my tears, since I am just a sojourner, i.e. an unlanded immigrant with you, a dweller like all of my fathers. And to help understand this verse, let me quote Rav David Kimchi, the Radak, and his explanation. V'ha inyan, ki adam ba'aretz kamo hager ba'aretz lolo, ki nosea tamid mi makom l'makom, kein adam be'olam ein lo ma'amad v'kiyumbo, ki kol yom hu baderech she'yisa mimenu v'lo yada yomo. And the meaning is that man in this world is like a sojourner in a land that is not his. He travels perpetually from place to place. So too man in this world, he has no permanence, no standing, since each day travels away from him. That is, his life spins away with each day, and he doesn't know when his time will come. So even though there's somewhat more permanence of a toshav than a ger, but the assertion still is that human frailty, that human vanity, that human mortality brings our poet to despair, because he recognizes that his life is quick and fleeting and has no permanence and no stability. So with words found almost word for word in the book of Eov and Job, he asks God to simply stop paying attention to him, since he believes that it is God's scrutiny that is causing the inevitable punishments. And therefore, if God would simply stop scrutinizing this frail and mortal human being, this frail and mortal human being can survive, even though his life is worth very little. Hasha mimeni ve'avliga b'terem eilech ve'ineni. Turn away from me and let me live before I depart and cease to exist.